Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Two FBI agents assigned to the same cases for different reasons.
No explainable cause of death.
Do you have a theory?
You believe in the existence of extraterrestrials.
One a skeptic, one a believer. Both trying to answer questions that were never meant to be uncovered.
I think those kids have been abducted.
By who?
By what? Seal this up. Nobody sees or touches this.
Distinguishing features indicate subject is not human. You've got to trust me.
I gotta know what they're protecting.
Hold it right there.
Between reality and fantasy.
You've got to protect me.
Terror and reason.
Mulder, what are they?
Trust and betrayal.
The X-rays and pictures.
Lie the chilling secrets.
Mulder, is that you? Mulder?
Of the X-Files.
Agent Mulder, what are his thoughts?
Agent Mulder believes we are not alone.
Clearly, we must have been abducted by UFOs. Maybe that's the reason that Resonance Rewind is now in its fourth year, whereas, of course, the X-Files went into 10 years, with, of course, the opening line, Agent Dana Scully being instructed to debunk an FBI project dubbed the X-Files, paranormal cases that were reopened by Agent Fox Mulder. Of course, this is it. The moment in 1993 where Chris Carter's baby effectively was launched. And then, of course, a year later, after they shot the pilot, it went to series. And in many ways, the world never looked back. Certainly, cigarette-smoking man never looked back. And indeed, Chris Carter himself was very happy with the whole process, I believe. Directed by Robert Mandel, let's find out what two people who weren't even born when The X-Files actually launched have to say about this particular introduction, which I think has got certainly echoes of Twin Peaks in more ways than one, but maybe that's just me. Jessica Burtis in North Carolina, your thoughts on this particular exciting episode?
So I had never seen X-Files, but I've had, of course, heard of it. I feel like it's a very famous show, but I didn't know that it was about aliens going into it because I didn't look at anything prior. And actually, funnily enough, this month, I think on March 20th, is Alien Abduction Day. So I feel like it's very perfect for March. but aliens, I realized, are one of my fears for some reason, television, we didn't see any aliens in this episode. So that's okay. So I'm good so far. But I mean, I don't know. It's a good alien abduction show. I love how they have a skeptic with someone who believes in the paranormal. I think that's always a bit more interesting when they try to have that balance of two people who kind of might disagree. And then they have to put them in with the situation with something a bit impossible. I think that having it from the government point of view is interesting as well. They're both kind of working for an organization rather than just kind of two people in the town running around. But I don't know. I'm a sucker for alien abduction plot lines. I feel like it reads like it could almost be just a normal criminal investigation show, except the whole fact that there's like everybody's going missing in the woods and it turns out to be aliens. But I see why it's so iconic because it does make me want to continue the show, even if I think I'd be terrifying myself.
Well, there are only another 209 episodes to actually work through to go through the full 210 episode catalogue. Jared Palmer, somebody else who wasn't born when this actually emerged onto the cultural consciousness, your thoughts from the perspective of 2024?
Well, I would say this isn't my first episode of X-Files. I think the first episode of X-Files I watched was the one you gave us during last year's film and science TV. So
it was a treat. The postmodern Prometheus was a treat, if not necessarily symbolic of a series as a whole.
So, I mean, I had always grown up watching Star Trek, and before Star Trek, the X-Files was stocked, which I would skip most of the time. But this was the first time watching the pilot, and I understood the characters a little bit because I'd watched some clips before the Star Trek episode aired. Either it was on Virgin Media when they were having TV, or like Pick or whatever it is. I think it's Horror now. I mean, ultimately, I did enjoy the episode. I think it was very slow to begin with, but I think you needed to have that slowness in it to build the pace up. And I think it really established the characters. And the one thing I think I really did like about this episode is that it played against the stereotype of the male being the skeptic and the female being the believer. And this time they switched the roles, which I really did enjoy. And I did enjoy sort of the chemistry between Mulder and Scully, that like Mulder is this believer and Kelly's this skeptic. But I also did like how it sort of built a bit more of the mystery about why Mulder is into these sort of things. So I ultimately did enjoy the episode. So yeah.
Certainly it was based, Jessica, on another show that we looked at a wee while back as Residence Rewind, Kolchak the Night Stalker. You may recall the newspaper man who effectively was encountering all sorts of things. I think Chris Carter acknowledged his homage to that. But then it took a completely different turn, and that's why we welcome Phil Leonis, who was alive, like I myself was, when the episode aired first time in 1994, 94, etc. Phil Leonis, welcome as ever to Residence Rewind. You obviously have you have some skin in the game when it comes to the X-Files, if only for your co-host in podcasting, Dean Haglund, although he doesn't appear in this particular episode.
Can you hear me okay? Yes, excellent. I have been realizing how much skin I have in the game, actually, on a very personal level, not just with what you discussed, but also I've been really firsthand aware of how much got shook loose in the psyche, in the collective psyche, much of which we're still grappling with politically, socially, and in my personal life. So it is fascinating to come back to it 30 years later and look at that pilot episode. It's also fascinating in the wake of us resonating or resonance rewinding. I guess that would be to turn the title into a verb. Resonance rewinding into the Twin Peaks pilot, made, of course, in 1989, aired on television in 1990. But I always think that the opening of this, which is so very Twin Peaks-ish, that opening scene, and the one person says, "Wait a minute, you mean she was part of the class of 1989 also?" I mean, I think that that's a reference to Twin Peaks. And and if that weren't enough, how about the famous line from Twin Peaks, "It is happening again," being used in the opening of this show. A couple of thoughts. It was refreshing at the time, of course. We had shows where the intellect, where the brain, where the expertise was embodied by a woman before. But it often was for not comedic effect at the expense of the woman, but the gender kind of play of upending traditional roles was a source of humor in previous shows. I'm thinking like Remington Steele. This was the first time where it's played for keeps. And what I love about it is it's wrong to say ultimately that she's the skeptic, he's the believer. She's also a woman of faith. She's devoutly Catholic, we find out. He's a skeptic when it comes to religion. So what's nice is the way that it weaves back and forth between them. They toss the ball back and forth. And that's what sets it up for such a wonderful dynamic to explore these characters, because I think even in the best written of shows, if it was simply she's this, he's that, you back yourself into a corner right very early on. And they left open for as long as was possible so many options, so many possibilities.
Jessica, favorite moments that struck you as particularly worthy of note from this particular 44 minutes? Opener?
I mean, I think the opening is very interesting. I think all of this very spookiness, the eeriness of it, the forest, I think the use of the forest scenes when they go in at night to look around the forest, I thought that was very interesting. Seeing the part with like the bodies where they were like, oh, it's not a person, it's like an orangutan and all that, that was creepy. I think a lot of the moments that stuck with me from this were just the creepy moments that I was really hoping we weren't just gonna see an alien jump out from somewhere. But yeah, I think also just interactions between Scully and Mulder were very good. I like their dynamic, and I've always heard people talk about Scully, so I was like, who is this character? And then when I was like, aha, I finally know who Scully is, it was good to like finally maybe I can start understanding the references.
Nobody down here but the FBI's most unwanted, a line that's used by David Duchovny, obviously, as Danny Scully. And I think we utter a sigh of relief in our particular dimension, Phil, that it was actually Gillian Anderson who got the role rather than Pamela Anderson.
You know, this is something that I rewatched the show, I don't know, in the 2000s. I rewatched the whole series, the first nine. Now there have been 11 seasons, of course. And what really struck me and surprised me that I had not remembered was how fully Gillian Anderson had her character in that pilot. She was fully there. It takes Duchovny a bit of time before he fully settles into Fox Mulder. As you're nodding your head, I guess you would agree with me. You go on throughout this season, and it really is sort of dramatic. If you jumped forward in time a year to compare Duchovny's performance, it took him a while to find it. But the memory, my memory of it certainly, and I think the cultural memory of it might have been a little bit different because Duchovny was the breakout star before Gillian Anderson was. And a big reason for that was he was good in interviews. He was glib. He was funny. He mastered the witty soundbite. Whereas Gillian Anderson in interviews, much like my answer to your question, would have a tendency to ramble. Interesting rambles, but not great for the soundbite. And so Duchovny became the breakout star first, but boy, she's the breakout actor right out of the gate.
It was always a show which shall forever be connected with my start at the University of Humberside, because obviously that's when the whole adventure began, and I feel as though I've been in an X-File ever since, really. But still, let's not talk about alien abduction when it comes to radio stations at this stage. Jared, what about your favourite moment?
I would have to say my favorite moments would have to be probably towards the bit where sort of Mulder and Scully sort of bond in their apartment room, when I think when Scully starts to believe him, and then like she's sort of spooked when she turns around and sees the same marks on her back as the victims, and then Mulder is the one to slowly like debunk her and like put her like worries to ease. And I thought that was really nice of him, because I think he could have, for his sake, could have played it on and could have like let it go. Be as if like on she will be the next victim, but he didn't. He was noble and admitting that actually it was just a mosquito bite. So I think that's what the one thing I liked about his character, that despite him wanting to find an explanation to the paranormal, he's not willing to cheat, or he's not willing to make things up or make people feel like miserable or anything. So I really did like that moment personally.
I don't know if it's my favorite moment. You didn't ask me my favorite, but I think it's the most important moment. I think it's important not just for the show and the characters, but for our culture at large, because here's a moment that invites genuine intimacy. She's vulnerable, she's scared, and he handles it as Jared is saying, not from the perspective of his objectives, his mission. He's not approaching it from the point of view of a man who is with a vulnerable woman. No, he's approaching it as a human being. He invites intimacy. And therefore, we cut to this wonderful like slumber party scene where she's literally revealed herself to him. And so he's opening up and revealing himself emotionally to her. It's genuine intimacy. And that's rare enough in this day and age. But on television in the early 1990s, incredible. My favorite, quote unquote, moments come maybe more as a filmmaker, where I'm so impressed, because this is a show that would end up famously having the biggest budget per episode in television history, and would earn those budgets by making truly cinematic masterpieces almost every week, big screen cinematic masterpieces. I think it was the first show ever to use the widescreen format even, and it earned it. But this is an episode that does so much with so little. It's striking to realize what a small budget they were operating under and how they used that small budget, that lack, to their advantage. The scene in the woods setting up a wonderful midsection of the show where you think it's happening again, and it's car lights through the trees and the man appearing. It's pretty low budget practical effects, lighting effects. And how about the car ride when he first marks it on the road, and that pays off so beautifully later on, and the impact of that scene where they quote unquote lose time and have some experience happen to them. it's not effects. It's the absence of effects. Things go dark. Things stop working. It's so profoundly creative. It's a masterclass in how to do a lot with very little, to take your limitations and use them as your strengths.
And I believe it was a pioneer, as far as series are concerned, in terms of shooting in Vancouver. It would very much pave the way for an awful lot of other series that went up there afterwards, including, of course, Stargate, SG-1, and so on.
Well, I think there was a lot of production in it, but it certainly paved the way for big American series to go there. And I always get a kick out of when they go to the hospital where the kids are, the institution. That's Riverview Hospital, which is such a famous location. It would come back in so many X-Files episodes. The Lone Gunman at one point, Dean's group, had an office there, an office set built in the Riverview Hospital. And it was a regular location for, what was it, Supernatural and Smallville, so many shows. But yeah, it paved the way. And while doing so, it makes the locale such a character in the series. So much so that when they moved to Los Angeles for season 5, I think it was, it was missed. It took a while before they readjusted how to tell their stories so that they could continue to make the locale be a character in the story they were telling.
Speaking of characters, I'll have to give an honorable mention, if not indeed favorite moment, to the masterclass in minimalism that was produced by William B. Davis as the cigarette-smoking man, who doesn't actually say a single word, not even a line in this particular episode. But there is this sense somehow, even in the opening episode, if you're not familiar with, obviously, his connections later on and very deep-rooted connections, that here is somebody who is interesting, shall we say.
Okay, I'll jump in. Yes. How wonderful to see someone, first of all, smoking on television to let you know that times had changed. Because in the old days, if someone was smoking, they were cool. They were the hero. But now you knew because he was smoking, he must be a villain. That's how they got away with showing someone smoking on television. That first shot of him in the office, he's just an extra. He's not even billed because he doesn't speak. He is an extra in it. And yet, the scene where he's sitting there in the beginning in the office, just listening, smoking, he looks so sick, almost just grim. And it turns out that was because the actor William Davis was so allergic to cigarettes. They did not have a plan for this to be a regular recurring character. They had no mythology built. That developed over the first few seasons. And as he came back, they had to create a fake herbal cigarette for him because he was so he would get so sick when he was in the presence. But my, doesn't it work? Doesn't it make him have just this kind of sickly, oily, grim demeanor about him in those opening shots?
Jessica, what about favorite characters? Any of them that stands to mind? I mean, there are a fair number here to actually work through. Including, I would say, some of the sidebars and so on. But who particularly captured your attention and who is worthy of an honorable mention?
I think Scully is my... I mean, maybe it's because I had heard people talk about her before and make references to her character that I was excited to finally meet her. It felt like kind of meeting an old friend that I'd had acquaintances talk about. So it was cool getting to see her and understand a bit more about her character and who she is. And I also think it's just interesting seeing... I always think that this, like... Typically, a lot of people who tend to be more skeptical about things and shows are interesting because I think usually I'm the opposite to those characters. And I kind of like and I end up liking them a bit more because of it. But I think, you know, also maybe just in honor of Women's Day, I was reminded, you know, having her as a very iconic character. I think that she's worth that being my favorite character. And usually I don't like the main characters in our episodes. I usually like the side characters. Character or the animal or Rover. So
yeah, interesting. Jared, what about yourself?
I would have to say it is Scully for this episode, because I do like how she's brought in, the way that she's introduced to initially just put Mulder out of the way and just like admit he's like crazy, he's wacko, but at the end she starts to sort of see his point of view. And I really did like the way that they introduced that through using her character. And I think continuing on for other episodes, I think I'd love to see that a little bit more. And I think I just really did like the dynamic. And it's definitely one that has, of course, stayed the course of history in terms of TV. And yeah, I think other than that, I would say my honorable mention would be the Smoking Man, because I really did think his character had a lot of mystery to it. Because, like, who's this person? Like, although he doesn't seem important in the beginning, now he's starting to, his actual character and his motives are starting to take place a little bit more. So I'll look forward to seeing that in more episodes that we review on this show.
One of the reviews from IMDb states the pilot episode is a mixture of excellent character development, a gripping plot, and fantastic lead performances. Getting it right in the pilot, Phil, is often easier said than done. Clearly, a lot is riding on the pilot, and you know the whole series could be worked through. Jessica and myself actually watched Randy Reinholtz and Gene Bruce Scott perform in a Zoom version, which kind of had as its backdrop the sort of the pilot that was never picked up for a series and what happened to the actors within that. So, you know, from a television point of view, do you think Chris Carter was effectively, you know, fingers crossed and a lot of prayer behind this?
Oh, boy, that's a really interesting question. He seemed to have a lot of great ideas. I don't think it was fingers crossed. I think it became more fingers crossed as the show became more and more successful, probably beyond their wildest dreams. And then it was that some of these ideas became the tail that wagged the dog. And but at this point in time, he knew what he wanted to make. That's why I'm saying the writing is so well constructed. And what's interesting about shows that were inspired by the X-Files is how often they look at the X-Files and see that universe of fascinating characters. And so their pilots become very heavy and busy with a lot of characters. You know, Jessica is saying that often her favorite character is one of the supporting characters. I don't think that's actually surprising for most shows. In this show, though, they really did make the concerted effort to say, you're going to want to follow these two people. You're going to want to follow them. And trust us, like the cigarette smoking man, we're going to inhabit their world with fascinating characters. But you're always going to want to follow these two. And since he was interested to a degree, like Kolchak, right, the Night Stalker, making an anthology show of sorts, which is really what it was for several seasons. There were these standalone anthology episodes and then maybe six episodes a year that weaved in the overarching mythology. My joke, Alex, was going to be that my favorite character was Alarm Clocks, because alarm clocks become such a recurring thing and people go nuts analyzing the numerology of the times that are shown. My favorite use of a date, I must say, is how the testimony of Billy at the end when he's been reborn is March 22nd. It's the first day of spring and he's been reborn. I like that a great deal. But of course, I agree with Jessica, if for no other reason than to honor International Women's Day, it has to be Scully. And what a great job Chris Carter did understanding how to introduce this woman's character, taking a page out of what Katharine Hepburn had learned decades earlier about how if you're going to have a tough, smart woman as your lead, you have to set it up in such a way that all the odds are against her, so that you have sympathy for her, because otherwise audiences will reject so often a tough, smart woman. But from the very beginning, we see her walking in. She's smaller than everybody else. She's younger than everybody else. She's being told a set of rules that already put her into conflict with someone that's supposed to be her partner. How untenable a situation that is. And how common must that have been, especially back then, for women in the workplace? We're all getting a sense of these untenable situations that women were expected not only to survive, but thrive in. So it's brilliant introduction of her. And finally, where the cigarette smoking man is concerned, I would just say that at the end, they've referenced Spielberg once already in the episode, but at the end, it's like right out of the last shot of Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's in a Pentagon warehouse, putting away where no one will ever find it, the evidence. And as he walks away, I was thinking to myself, well, this could be a series right here. Every week, what's this guy going to hide from the rest of the world that could change the way we live?
And arguably, Warehouse 13 took exactly that line and proceeded to run for at least 5 or 6 years with the whole thing. So it is out there. It's wonderful, of course, for me, that the way that the denouement with the Scully character, Gillian Anderson, she actually keeps the evidence. She's the sole person who has any evidence that's actually left. And evidence is such an important part here, because we are talking about an America which had experienced Watergate. It was experiencing, obviously, the aftermath of the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. We were in the Clinton presidency and so on. I was noted recently when some of my film students were actually looking at the 2017 Steven Spielberg movie, The Post, how in many ways Meryl Streep's character of Kay Graham, the owner of the Washington Post, effectively has a number of shots which you could say were echoes of Scully's appearance as a female in an all-male room, in an all-male environment, and how, again, that sort of coped with. That's just a sidebar, and we to discuss The Post would be a completely different line entirely. But again, intriguing from the point of view of dealing with conspiracies, dealing with government, dealing with the importance of integrity and standing up for the truth. I mean, the mantra of the show is, of course, the truth is out there. Where, of course, and what is the truth is something we continually seek for. Jared, music. Any thoughts on Mark Snow's work? Because obviously he'd go on to work for Smallville, he'd do stuff for Mutant X, and so on.
I think I start to see a lot from his Smallville influence comes from X-Files. And of course, I know for the pirate we didn't get the intro.
The whistling theme.
Yeah, but I think overall the music did serve its purpose. And I definitely see a lot of its inspiration for both the music and the atmosphere of it coming into shows like Smallville and, of course, Supernatural, which I'm still currently watching. So I think
it never ends.
It never ends. And even Russell T. Davis even takes a part of it. So even then, I still feel as if the music creates an amazing atmosphere in terms of the mystery. But it also, it doesn't solve everything. It leaves some things to be left unsolved in terms of like where the characters are going to go next. And I think that's what a pilot should do. It should introduce the characters, give enough feedback and allow the audience to take it in, but also leave some mysteries not to be solved. Because I think if you do that too early in the pilot, you're going to ruin the whole series. But I think it set it up well. And I think the music really does play into the atmosphere of the paranormal as well.
I have to say that the second episode with Jerry Hardin and Deep Throat was one which, for me, the series really began to catch fire and work through that. And we haven't got time to actually look at that in this particular run. But Jessica, we're turning to you now for the numbers. What are you going to offer? Is it going to be a kind of, well, it's in the month of International Alien Abduction Day. Where are you going to actually go for your score for the X-Files pilot episode?
Well, like I said, I'm usually I like the whole alien abduction plots, but alien shows typically are either hit or miss for me. But I actually really did like this one, and it does make me want to continue the show. I loved the themes of people just mysteriously reappearing and lights and marks on people. I thought that the way they're doing that, rather than just jumping into like a horror plot line with aliens, I thought was very interesting. And I do appreciate that it's in the month of Alien Abduction Day that we're watching it. But I think the show deserves a 9. I really like the characters.
Okay. Jared?
I would say I would have to give it a 7.5, because I think I really did like the introduction to the story, to the characters, and also the world building that it sets up. But I think for me, I think it was a bit slow, but I think because it was set in a more slow pace sort of environment. And I think for the X-Files, from what I've watched of them and what I've seen in terms of the clips from my youth, I think you need to build the pace up a little bit more. It can't be like fast or like moving rapidly. It needs to build it up. And I think that's what it does well. And I honestly think the pirate did its job, and I think it's a worthy episode, and it definitely is an influence going on for many other shows as well.
It's intriguing that neither Lone Gunman Millennium.
I, I,
or indeed Harsh Realm, kind of quite managed to capture this excitement. Although Millennium did reasonably okay. Philip, yes.
Well, I was going to say it's amazing that Jared approved of the music but disapproved of the pace, because I think the music is utterly responsible for the slow pace. I think the music is so bad and so slow and so unlike what comes. I mean, we have the line at the beginning, the class of 89. That's describing the music. It sounds straight out of the class of 89, and it's sort of laughable. And so some of the scenes, I'm so pulled out of it. They would have been better off just pulling the music. And indeed, it'd be interesting if we watched some of it with the music without a music track. How suspenseful actually is it? And if it's suspenseful, then suddenly the pacing changes dramatically. But so for sort of an opposite thing that I'm where I'm placing the blame versus Jared, I feel kind of the same way, though, you know, that our enjoyment is undercut at times. But I also am fascinated that Jessica is so committed to the idea that there's alien abduction going on.
Where it's North Carolina. No, I mean, clearly.
I don't mean in real life. Of course we know in real life it's happening. I just meant in this show that...
that not survive?
Because, I mean, it's many years before they finally tip their hand one way or another as to what's quote-unquote real. Because as Alex referenced, it's not just Watergate and the lack of trust from that. No. This was appealing to people who were already on the early web. So this is about MK Ultra experiments. This is about how the government performed the Tuskegee experiments on people. This is about the CIA covert operations under Reagan. You know, smuggling drugs up from South America into North America. This is what this is born out of and playing into, the idea that the government conducts experiments on its populace.
Maybe so, the government are the aliens.
So 30 years later, but, you know, spoiler alert, it's a yes and. Anyway, Alex, I'll give it an 8. I think as a pilot, it's a 10. It does what you want a pilot to do and then some. As an episode, yeah, you have to have room for all these other episodes like Postmodern Prometheus that are above an 8. So let's give it an 8 with room to grow on.
And I would also agree with an 8. We'll find out what Anna Coscanella, who at this moment of initial recording is preparing to sleep in a cardboard box outside Lincoln Cathedral, because of obviously raising funds for the homeless in Lincoln. So well done, Anna. And we'll hear your views, as I say, after a little piece of X-Files music. But a heads up, in terms of the next little batch of Resonance Rewinds, we've had a lot of pilot episodes. We've had 4 pilot episodes in a row. Next week, we start what I'm referring to as a kind of tribute, a celebration of somebody who is known to Phil Lynas, has actually sort of connected with Phil Lynas at a convention beforehand, certainly very much beloved of the Midweek Drive, sadly no longer with us. Celeste Yarnell is the actress in question, and we'll be looking at some of her appearances on television, starting off, as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned, with the Golden Cage episode of Land of the Giants, in which we see the opening shot being a man with a giant carrot, and also how for Thanksgiving you actually have to cope with using a catapult made out of braces to actually bring down a turkey. That and more on the next edition of Resonance Rewind, Land of the Giants, from the Irwin Allen stable, The Golden Cage. For now, though, to Jared Palmer, to Jessica Burtis, and to Phil Lynas, many thanks. I'm tempted to say not so much the Resonance Rewind line, keep on resonating, but maybe the resonance is always out there for this particular moment.
I'm just so glad none of our noses started spontaneously bleeding during the
Well, the music of Mark Snow there with the expanded version of the X-Files theme, of course, which would become very much part of the series legacy as it went into episode two onwards. But as promised, let's find out what Anna Koskinen has got to make of the pilot episode of the X-Files. We've heard, of course, the views of Phil Leonis and Jared and, of course, Jessica Burtis. But what are your thoughts, please, Anna, in terms of what you've just seen?
To be honest, I did not expect to like it so much. It was great. I like Mulder the best. His dynamic with Scully was incredible. And as Phil and Jared observed, the fact that you see people smoking inside, it's a nice change. it was really good altogether, and the story was really interesting, and the way it ended the episode, it's just it makes you want to just watch everything that's next.
So, were you familiar with the X-Files series in Romania, or was it a case of where you might have been familiar, but it was before your time?
Well, I did know about them, but I didn't know they were with aliens. I didn't know apparently anything except for the name. Because when you told me about them, I was like, yeah, I know them, I know, of course. But then I started watching them and I started searching them online and I saw what they were actually about. And I was actually impressed because it's one of the few films up and series up until now that I watch with aliens that I enjoy so much.
Okay, what were your favorite moments from the pilot episode then?
So I think I have multiple favorite moments, but it was in the beginning when Scully first went into his lab and he said here with and Mulder said that he's here with everything else that's hated by the FBI. And the other part where Mulder said to Scully, I think in the cemetery or in the forest, and he said in the rain, I'm not crazy, Scully, and the way he was looking, because he sounded so sincere and he sounded more than just an FBI, just more than an FBI detective. He sounded, I don't know, he sounded incredible. And the part where she realized these things actually might be happening, and she told him, Scully told Mulder, you said it yourself. And then he said, yeah, but you have to actually write it down in the report. I think that's the changing moment. And the series up until now, because it's the moment where everything takes a turn because she realizes it's true and she actually has to explain it to the others.
That's the question of belief, which is central to the whole
Yeah.
series, and which Phil Lynott has, of course, rightly raised as a key element in terms of the way in which the symmetry of this episode works, which, again, I think with frequent viewing does tie in very much with Twin Peaks, although it would go off on a completely different line, understandably, as the years would proceed. Okay, a number of key folk, obviously, in terms of honorable mentions, I would have thought for the favorite actor, Charles Chaffee, Section Chief Scott Blevins, Sasha, Sarah Koskoff, I should say, as Teresa Newman, Zachary Ainsley as Billy Miles, Coroner Truitt, played by Stephen E. Miller, of course, and Clifty Young as Dr. J. Newman, or Nemon, I should say. Anybody stand out for yourself, or are you going to be focusing very much on the two leads of Anderson and Duchovny, Scully and Mulder?
So the I as I said in the beginning, I think I made it obvious from the beginning that they were the best. But I really liked and now her name does not come to me, Dr. Neiman's daughter. I really liked how she acted.
Oh, that would be
And
Sarah Koskoff playing Teresa Neiman.
yes, Teresa. Because when she was at that, let's call it restaurant with them. And she was telling them she was afraid and that she thinks she's gonna die. She was so sincere, and you could actually see the fear in her eyes. And it was that fear combined with a bit of madness that was getting to her, and it was just incredible.
Did you believe yourself from the off, or did you feel that actually there were aliens? Because, of course, the whole ambiguity of whether or not there are actually aliens out there was played around with in this particular series. And as we know, there are parts of the world, parts of the globe, where alien abduction is very much a thing in terms of a belief and so on, and other areas where we tend to think, oh, it's we take a more skeptical view. What are your own thoughts on this as the episode sort of went?
So as the episode progressed, I think I resonated more in the beginning with Scully and her skepticism, but I think Mulder's way of putting it, and you could see it in his eyes that it wasn't madness, it wasn't craziness. He was actually a firm believer in this type of things that cannot be scientifically proven, can maybe raise the question that is it actually something there?
Although arguably we have always, as human beings over the millennia, actually had difficult challenges in terms of whether or not there was something actually there. Clearly, Chris Carter again wrote a masterpiece in this particular area, and it was directed by Robert Mandel. But we did talk about Mark Snow's music which did send a sort of shiver down the spine in many ways. How did you feel the actual underplaying music worked for this episode? Did it kind of carry with it the connotations of horror and so on, or did you feel it was perhaps overly done? What were your thoughts?
So up until right now, when you mentioned it, I realized I did not acknowledge it because it was so well integrated in the whole episode that it was just part of it. Yes, it was actually, it did in the beginning at some key points, did send shivers down your spine, as you said. It was really good. I don't know, the episode was good from the beginning to the end. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, well, you've heard the results of the earlier group, but we now need to ask you, what's your particular score, Anna Koshkonel, for the first episode of The X-Files back in 1993?
So I'm going to continue watching it. And because of this, because I liked it so much, I want to believe that the next episodes are going to be even better. So I'm going to give this one an 8.5. And with the hopes that the other ones will get a 10 in the end.
Dad?
Billy.
Oh, God.
Scully. Scully!
Mulder, what happened? There was a light.
It was incredible.
Hear me. Raise your right hand. Tell me about the light, Billy. When did you first see the light?
In the forest. We were all in the forest having a party. All my friends. We were celebrating.
What were you celebrating?
Graduation. And then the light came. It took me away to the testing place. They would tell me to gather the others so that they could do tests. They put something in my head. Here. I would wait for their orders.
Billy. Who gave the orders?
The light. They said it would be okay. No one would know. But the test didn't work. They wanted everything destroyed. They said they were leaving. Afraid they're coming back?
Don't be afraid, Billy. We're here to help you.
What we've just witnessed, what we've read in your field reports, the scientific basis and credibility just seem wholly unsupportable. You're aware of that.
Yes, sir. My reports are personal and subjective. I don't think I've gone so far as to draw any conclusion about what I've seen.
Or haven't seen, as seems to be the case. This, time loss. You did or did not experience it?
I can't substantiate it, no.
What exactly can you substantiate, Agent Scully? I see no evidence that justifies the legitimacy of these investigations.
There were, of course, crimes committed.
Yes, but how do you prosecute a case like this? With testimony given under hypnosis from a boy who claims that he was given orders from some alien force through an implant in his nose. You have no physical evidence.
This is the object described by Billy Miles as a communication device. I removed it from the exhumed body. I kept it in my pocket. It was the only piece of evidence not destroyed in the fire. I ran a lab test on it. The material could not be identified.
Agent Mulder. What are his thoughts?
Agent Mulder believes we are not alone.
Thank you, Agent Scully. That'll be all.